And they are to be thrown out if you don't take them. So on the way out, look at all those things that are back there. There's America magazines and Commonweal, lots of tapes. If anybody still has a CD that the little tape thing, anybody has the tapes, you can play them on your tape machine. Okay, we're getting ready to start. And Jeanette Love has a few things to add on to what I said about helping people who need help. And she's going to come up and tell us a little bit more about the two things that I told you about.
Hello, thank you so much for this opportunity. As you know, she was talking about the homeless, about it's the interfaith community that is doing the Homeless 2018, which is Saturday. If you can come to that, it gives us the opportunity to spread the community of word and life and go far reaching, because our homeless brothers and sisters are really in need. And one of the areas that the CLU, which is Clergy and Laity United for Economic Justice, what they've been working on for the past at least 8 years is trying to get the mentally ill out of the jails and into homes, into places where they can get some help. And it's cost effective. It is costing us a lot of money to keep them in jail. So if you can come on Saturday, please do so. What's also important, next Tuesday there's a supervisors meeting. At that time, CLU is trying to help the supervisors understand there is money in the budget. Let's use it for that purpose so we can really do something for those that are mentally ill and help them instead of having them this revolving door back into jail, out back into jail, and costing us a fortune. So if you can be there next Tuesday, the supervisors' meeting is at 9 a.m., if you can be there as a presence, expand this community, please do so. If you can speak for 2 minutes, just speaking for that purpose, please do so. We will have our red stoles there so that the supervisors will know how many people are supporting that. Okay? So please, yes. The time on Saturday is from 5 to 8. It's at the Trinity Episcopal Church. Okay, that's for the meal. It starts with the meal. It's a whole program. Okay, please come. It's going to be a wonderful opportunity. And then next Tuesday, the supervisors meeting, their regular place. Please, please come. I know it sometimes takes over an hour and even more, but it's really expanding this community out further reaching into the actual cosmic community. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeanette. And for those who don't realize it, Jeanette is a Roman Catholic woman priest, and she has a community at the Beatitudes Church on the First Congregational Church, and she says Mass every Saturday night at 5:30. 4:30. Oh, thank you. 4:30. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any leftover questions from before? Hi, Patricia.
What came up in me is this idea of identity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because the young lady there, and the young lady there is a nun. You and I have a mutual friend, Sister Judy Cawley. And when people would talk about Jesus Christ, and she would say, well, you know, his last name wasn't Christ. And I always found that very funny. And the idea of an identity, because I grew up loving Jesus, the person. And when you bring up the fact about the Abraham, he was born into the family of Abraham, I have since shifted and realized that is I'm going to say this. I have no idea about this, but this is something that I have kind of read about, and I know there are a lot of religious scholars in the room, so this may not be true at all. But I have read or heard that when John the Baptist baptized Jesus, he became, let's use the word, enlightened or awakened. I don't know if that's true or not. But this, what I'm speaking about, is those terms, awakened, enlightened, right? Because what I realize, Jesus never said, identified himself as I'm the son of Mary and Joseph and all the rest, and I'm born of this family. He always said, I am the way, the truth, and the light. So he never identified as a thing in the physical world, okay? Mm-hmm. So here's my thought, and what I'd like to hear your thinking on, is if we are a spark of God, and when we come into this physical body, we are God. That's what Jesus is saying. So we too are the way, the truth, and the light. But what we are identified with is the name we were given and all the things that have happened to us within this life. We think we are that identity. But if we really are, as Jesus said, and we are the love that is represented, we are already all of that. We are really already perfect. So, when Jesus said, I am in this life, but not in this world, but not of the world, it reminded me of the lady today that spoke about her experience, that she had the mystical experience. Now, it seems to me that if it seems to me, my thought is that what the goal in this life is to just wake up to the fact that we're not the one that came in, because we're eternal, right? God's eternal. So we came in from somewhere. Let's say our consciousness entered this body. So what's in here is the consciousness that is perfect. That is all of these things we aspire to be, peaceful and loving and all that. We're already that. So what do you think about the idea that the real purpose is to have perhaps an experience like that, and hopefully in the end to abide in that experience, to stay in that experience where we realize, oh my God, I'm not who I thought I was. I'm in here. The real me, the I am, which has no physical identity, the truth, the way, the light.
Mm-hmm.
So do you feel that the purpose of our being here, because we're having an experience, we're supposed to be here for some reason, is to wake up to the fact that that's who we are, and to pray and to ask for the grace to have that awakening?
Yes, absolutely. And I like the word grace, because it's not something you can make happen. It's happening.
Right. Thank you.
And there are moments of awakening. And at the same time, there's a gradual awakening. But all of it is from grace. In other words, it's a gift to realize that you're more than what's on your driver license. So thank you, sure. And I think we would all agree with what you brought up. So, I'm going on to our chapter 6, mentioning a couple of things. This is the one about the Sacred Heart. And Alice MacDonald is here. I quoted her in my book here, so I'm going to read her little quotation, which I found very helpful. I'll read her quotation, then I'll explain. For St. Margaret Mary, she's the one that had these visions of Jesus showing his Sacred Heart. for St. Margaret Mary fire, which is typically associated with hell, changed into the fire of divine love. For Teilhard, the Sacred Heart became a divine pledge that the universe of matter will not end by fire, but be reborn in it. For him, at the heart of matter, was a lovingly beating world heart, the burning heart of God. It was a heart on fire, and God was manifesting divine love from and within the heart of matter. And I think that's a very good summary of the new way of looking at the Sacred Heart. And Teilhard himself says, still on page 54, "It would be difficult for me to convey how deeply and forcefully my life developed under the sign of the Sacred Heart of Jesus." You recall last time I mentioned this wonderful vision, a moment in which, as Patricia just said, he had a sudden awareness. He was in a church looking at a picture of the Sacred Heart, and suddenly the contours of the man with the beard dressed in red and white clothes disappeared, and he saw the heart as the center of the whole universe. And I want to add one other quotation. This is from Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers. He was also a minister, and it's just such a beautiful quote, and I wanted to put it here. "At the center of the universe is a loving heart that continues to beat and that wants the best for each person. Anything that we can do to help foster the intellect and spirit, the emotional growth of our fellow human beings, that is our job. Those of us who have this particular vision must continue against all odds, since life is for service." Is what his own life was about on that 57th. That would be an example of what Patricia just brought up. A new consciousness about who you are. It's not just about how do I fulfill my goals. It is about how do I find my place of service in the world? And Jeanette just gave us an example of how to do that this weekend. So another quote from Teilhard, you're speaking to Jesus now. "Your main purpose in this revealing to us of your heart was to enable our love to escape from the constrictions of the too narrow, too precise, too limited image of you which we had fashioned for ourselves." Those pictures of him, too limited, since they just look like one particular white guy pointing to his heart on the outside. "What I discern in your breast is simply a furnace of fire. And the more I fix my gaze on its ardency, the more it seems to me that all around it, the contours of your body melt away and become enlarged beyond all measure, until the only features I can distinguish in you are those of the face of the world which has burst into flame. I no longer see you with the beard and the mustache. What I now see when I look at the picture of your heart is a world on fire." On fire with the what? With divine love. Everybody follow? Good. And on page 60, I have a prayer that I would like to recommend, kind of a morning offering for those of you who relate to this way of talking. Jesus, may all that happens to me today open my heart to your limitless love. May all that happens lead me to love limitlessly. Thank you for the graces you beam without ceasing on me and on all the cosmos. I dedicate everything that I think, say, feel, do, and am to co-creating with you a world of justice, peace, and love. May the hearts of Jesus and Mary be with me here, now, and always. It'd be a beautiful way to start the day. Okay, any questions on this? Okay, Teilhard was also very conscious of the female archetype. And he identifies the archetypal feminine as the energy that does what love does, uninterrupted unifying. It's always bringing things together rather than separating. And I have this little poem by St. Hildegard of Bingen on page 66. Sophia, which is the Greek word for wisdom. You of the whirling wings, circling, encompassing energy of God, you quicken the world, bring it to life. You quicken the world in your clasp. You hold the world and bring it to life. One wing soars in heaven. One wing sweeps the earth. And the third flies all around us. Praise to Sophia, let the earth praise her. Isn't that beautiful? So that would be another example of awakening to an energy that's bigger and that transcends our own limitations. And by the way, this sense of the divine feminine is not limited to the Catholic and Episcopal appreciation of the Virgin Mary. It goes all the way back to ancient times. And I have a quotation in here from a pagan prayer to the goddess Isis. She is the mother goddess of Egypt. And this is a prayer addressed to her. O holy, blessed lady, you are there when we call, stretching out your hand to push aside anything that might harm us. In other words, she's acting in a motherly way. I'm on 67, in the middle. You are there when we call, stretching out your hand to push aside anything that might harm us. And this is the part that's so beautiful and shows such an appreciation of the power of the feminine. Because remember, these people in ancient times were very conscious of and attached to astrology. So listen to what he's now going to ask the goddess Isis, or say to her. You even untangle the web of fate in which we may be caught, even stopping the stars for us if their pattern is in any way harmful. In other words, you'll even change the horoscope around so that we could have your blessing. Isn't that beautiful? So this shows us, again, this limitless sense of what's in us. because the next step, instead of saying, O Holy Blessed Lady up there, it would be, O Holy Blessed Feminine Energy in me and everywhere around me. And then the very same prayer. Okay, any questions on any at this point? Hi.
I don't know if it's a question or if I'm just trying to figure something out.
Yeah.
I've been thinking of Jung and the transcendental function.
Yeah.
It just hit me, sort of the two opposites, creating serve. I'm just wondering if
like in the Trinity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So was that something he thought about, or was this just a coincidence in that way?
You mean Jung?
Yeah. Do you think it correlated in what he was?
Yes, very much so.
It never hit me before until today.
Yeah. What Helen is referring to is what Jung called the transcendent function of the psyche, which means that whenever you're facing two opposite choices or conflicts, when you feel like there are two things warring against each other in you or in the world around you, you can trust that from the center between the two opposing forces, there will arise a third option which will pull it all together for you. And sometimes it comes in a dream. We call that the transcendent function. It's a wonderful thing to trust. And it happens when you hold the opposites rather than engage in battle between two opposites. You kind of pull them together and just let them be in you without conflict. I both want to have a career and be a parent. So those might feel like two opposing forces. Sometimes people come to me in therapy and have that question. I do want to be a parent, but I also realize my career takes up a lot of my time and energy, but I still want to have both. That if you sit there and hold them both rather than try to come up with a solution just rises naturally by the holding of the two. I know it takes a lot to trust that, but I've seen it happen over and over again. Here's an example of which that I'd like to give from my own experience. Because I was in therapy and a few years back, and I said, I feel like I have to be in control or else everything will fall apart. So those are my two opposites. In control, or if you're not in control, there'll be chaos. I have to be in control or everything will fall apart. So the therapist said, well, just picture yourself holding both of those, one in each hand, which I did. Close my eyes, and she said, now just tell me what arises when you hold them both rather than think, I have to choose one or the other. It has to be either full control or chaos. Instead of thinking either or, just have them both sit there. And this was so amazing. I suddenly said, without thinking, let the chips fall where they may. I thought, oh, that's it. Let the chips fall where they may. I don't have to be in control, and It doesn't matter how they fall, how chaotic, so what? I'll just deal with it. That was an example of this third force. And that's... All right, so let's just take a look at the ancient goddess had three features. She was the virgin, she was the mother, and she was the wise queen. So the Virgin Mary is ever virgin. She is the mother of all the living. She is the seat of wisdom. She is the queen of the universe. We just took the same three elements from the ancient goddesses and we saw them in Mary. But for our purposes and from chaotic point of view, instead of thinking of these three as out there in some person, you say to yourself, how are these three in me? Virgin does have, by the way, virgin does not refer to the hymen. Virgin refers to a single-minded focus. So on page 70, I have how these energies can awaken in us. We become focused on the virgin part. We become focused on the divine in all things. This is the equivalent of virginal power. It's a single focus of one-pointedness, a directedness toward and openness to the cosmic Christ. That certainly was visible in Mary. Second, we have the mother. We show nurturing love and caring connection to our planet. This is the mother energy. And this is both for men and women. And third, the wise queen, the wise ruler. We seek wisdom and use our powers wisely. This is the wise woman and queen energy.
Everybody follow?
Good. Okay. Any questions about this part? I'd like to take a look on page 81 because I had mentioned the Lord is my shepherd. And this is a prayer that I composed as based on this 23rd Psalm. Jesus, with you as my shepherd, I never want for anything. You gave me this beautiful planet with green pastures and life-giving waters. They refresh me, body, mind, heart, and soul. Your gospel shows me the right paths on my journey. Now when I walk through a dark valley, I'm not afraid anymore, because I know you are right here beside me, my caring companion. You keep showing me the ways you protect and guide me. You made a place for me at your messianic banquet. You anointed me with an earth oil of gladness. I'm thankful for the abundance you share with me. Surely love and goodness shall grace me all my life, and I will dwell in this wonderful world, the house of the Lord, and be to the world a shepherd like you. So that would be, you know, that would be an example of how you would take the shepherd image and bring it into yourself so that it's not about something outside you. Now, J.R. had a comment about the church, and I'm in the chapter, taking a look now at the chapter on the church and religion. And he said, now I'm on the top of page 75, and this is a quote from, well, first let's give the quote of Teilhard on 74, then top of 75. No longer simply a religion of individuals and of heaven, but a religion of mankind, humankind, and of the earth. That is what we are looking for at this moment. And remember, he's saying all these things a long time ago. He's already so far ahead. Now, top of page 75, it has sometimes seemed to me that there are three weak stones sitting dangerously in the foundation of the modern church. Three problems. First, a government that excludes democracy, because it's an autocracy. One person ruling. Second, a priesthood that excludes women. You can see why he got in trouble with the officials. He said this in 1929. And third, a revelation that excludes for the future prophecy. In other words, the revelation is all there in the Bible rather than the prophetic voices of various people along the way. He recognized all three of those. He had serious issues with the bureaucracy and they with him. And it was so nice hearing from Jeanette, because she has been brave enough to be ordained a priest. And she is truly a priest as a woman. So, other questions about this part? So, how would a global consciousness turn into a practice on page 79, down toward the bottom of the page? Global consciousness becomes spiritual practice when we engage in global action. Perhaps our sense of awe in nature happens so that we can respond in a caretaking way. Nature makes you smile at her for the same reason that a baby is cute, so that you will take care of him. This leads us to respond to her needs. We commit ourselves to take a stand to save our two threatened resources. Our sense of wonder in nature, joined with our commitment to the preservation of Earth, includes all that religion includes: faith, integrity, ritual, and devotion. Nothing less is required of us as a church than what Teilhard refers to as an enduring belief in the world as the right place for an ever-unfolding incarnation. What's an incarnation? The divine coming into the human and the natural. And he no longer believed that he had to align all his beliefs to the official teachings. I realize I've gotten to that place in my own life, and you have to ask yourself if you've gotten there too. Or do you have to check to be sure that the official voice mimics yours? Has the time come for us to have our own theology? That's the kind of question you would ask yourself. would we be brave enough to have our own sacraments rather than just the seven that we inherited, some of which do not apply to deeds? Well, those are the kind of questions that come up for you when you're moving in this direction of cosmic consciousness. So in chapter 9, I talk about the Eucharist, which is the center of our faith, which is the source of nurturance. And I want to give this wonderful quotation of Teilhard on page 87. And now he's speaking to Jesus again. From the moment you said, "This is my body," which he said at the Last Supper, from the moment you said, "This is my body," not only the bread and wine on the altar, but to a certain extent, everything in the whole universe became yours and nourishes us in the life of grace and spirit. The Holy Eucharist is, in fact, extended throughout the whole universe. The whole host, the whole world is a host, and constitutes a promise of its transfiguration. This is how we'll be transformed. It captures all the power of loving in the whole universe. Or another simpler way of saying it is this. So here's Jesus at the Last Supper. He's holding the bread. And he's going to say, "This is my body." Our question is this. Where was he looking when he said that? Was he looking at the bread like this and saying, "This is my body"? Or was he looking out into the entire world and saying, "This is my body"? That's the difference between the limited and the limitless. This is what we're going for, and what he, Teilhard, helps us get to. The Eucharist, 86. The Eucharist, what is heaven like? Heaven, a communion of saints. Interchange of help and prayer among those in heaven, those suffering, those on the pilgrim way. But heaven is also the banquet in which we find nourishment and fellowship in Christ. So all our communions are foretastes of this ultimate destiny that we are all moving toward, which is one gigantic messianic banquet. So all our communions then are one communion, and all our masses are one mass. All our Eucharists are one Eucharist. Every monstrance, the holder for the sacred host, is exposing the precious value of matter. Every natural thing is a monstrance, showing us a morsel of the body of Christ. The Eucharist is the sacrament of limitless connectedness. I want to share another quotation from Teilhard. Now I'm on page 92. This is so wonderful and so powerful. Over every living thing which is to spring up to grow, to flower, to ripen during this day, Jesus say these words, "This is my body." Over every death force which is waiting to corrode, wither, or cut things down, say again your command, "This is my blood." Imagine having such a sense of the Eucharist that he had. This I consider his most outstanding mystical realization. That the Eucharist can't be that one little white host. It has to be something gigantic. It can't be limited. It has to include the whole cosmos. And I have an example of that from another book, now on page 90, second paragraph. And this is a book called Torture and the Eucharist by William Kavanagh. He said, "The Eucharist is the true politics, as St. Augustine saw, because it is the public performance of the true eschatological, which means future, or future city of God in the midst of another city which is passing away." In other words, what looks like a city that's passing away, like this one and all cities, there's actually a bigger city that includes the whole planet. And that's what we celebrate in the Eucharist. And then finally, Beatrice Bruteau, she says, "This view of the world, which I am here calling the Eucharistic planet, it's a view of the world as the real presence of the divine, of the absolute, a view of the world as a single living body in which the various members freely give themselves as food to one another. A sense of a Eucharistic planet, of the real presence of the divine in the world, is something we need now for the protection of our planet." She has stated it so well. All those centuries of arguing, is the host the actual body and blood of Christ, or is it just a symbol? They were missing the whole point, that the whole cosmos is the host, the real body and blood of God, which is the real body and blood of all of us and of all of nature. It's all one. And when we would come to, if we ever came to appreciate it fully, we would love being here. And we would want to be the Eucharist for each other. We would want to be food for each other. As St. Augustine says, "In the Eucharist, the body of Christ gives the body of Christ to the body of Christ." Yes. Do you want to come up over here? Okay. Okay. Good. She's bringing up a good point. She's saying about terrible natural disasters, which happened here this year, and now the volcano. Over every death force, which is withering and cutting us down, speak your command. This is my blood. So this appreciation of God in matter is not bunnies and butterflies. It's a combination of bunnies, butterflies, and earthquakes and fires and so forth. And somehow we're appreciating that all these natural things somehow come together as part of the evolutionary plan, and that all of these things are kind of working themselves out in the course of our lifetime so that evolution can proceed. Great earthquakes are responsible for the Rockies. That's why we have Rockies, because there were such gigantic continental shifts that it brought about these beautiful mountains. Everybody follow? Somehow you'd have to trust that both negative and positive, you're holding in each hand the wonderful fun things and the terrible disasters. You're holding these both, and from the center comes, this is my body and this is my blood. And somehow you're finding that a source of nurturance. Yeah.
When you see a bomb, that's when I see the fire of the earth ablaze. Is that included in all this?
That is an example of a human choice that is contrary to the kingdom of justice, peace, and love.
So how did we as a community of faith see that God in that as well?
Good question. It's not seeing God as causing it. It's seeing that the will of God allows us to have the choice to hurt or help ourselves. And somehow we take action in whatever way we can to speak truth to power. Dennis, did you have something to add to this question?
Well, for me, as an anti-nuclear activist struggling to follow Jesus, I think about Jesus' words, take up your cross and follow me. And I think of nuclear weapons as being the cross of the 20th and 21st century. So somehow, take up your cross and follow me. And also, I was in prison and you visited me. Is something about coming into the world overshadowed by nuclear weapons and saying, no matter how ugly it gets, I will bring love into this place. I will keep alive the hope of a different kind of life in the middle of this terrible invention that we have brought forth.
Thank you. And that's certainly a beautiful way to end our class. So we'll see you next week.
I also wanted to point out that we do have another woman here in the audience who has answered the call to become a Roman Catholic priest. And Cynthia, Cindy right here is another. So Jeanette and Cindy are both ordained Roman Catholic women priests. All right, so next week we read until page 138. And the people between G and M will bring the snacks. And thank you to all the people that brought snacks today. They were wonderful and abundant. Thank you very much.